Now, Milton Friedman's death was a moment for this counter-revolution to not just fet their great hero, their great guru, but also to retell publicly, and again, and we saw this in the Canadian newspapers, particularly the National Post, to retell the story of how this ideology triumphed around the world. As Michael Walker said, who was a good friend of Milton Friedman's, to tell the story of the inevitability of their ideas, how they won the battle of ideas. And it's a sort of a fairy tale version of history that we've all heard so many times, which is, I'm just going to do a really quick capsule version of it, which is Keynes used to have hegemonic control over the public policy debates after the Great Depression and after the Second World War. During this time, Milton Friedman and Friedrich von Hayek protected the flame of pure capitalism at the University of Chicago. They were a band of persecuted outlaws. No one would listen to them. Until along came Reagan and Thatcher, who championed their ideas peacefully and in a democracy, precisely because, as Michael Walker says, they are as inevitable as gravity. And they won that battle of ideas fair and square. Now, interestingly, Milton Friedman never subscribed to the fairy tale myth of how they won, how they beat the Keynesians, and how they beat the developmentalists and the third world nationalists and the democratic socialists. He was a much more practical person. He had what I call the crisis theory or the shock doctrine. This wasn't mentioned in any of the obituaries, the tens of thousands of words written in appreciation of Milton Friedman, but I believe this really is the most important passage that Milton Friedman ever wrote, and really is the most important passage for all of us to understand about how this ideology beat us. Friedman wrote this in 1982. He said, "Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. That, I believe, is our basic function, to develop alternatives to existing policies, to keep them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes politically inevitable." That there is the manifesto of what I call disaster capitalism, the taking advantage of a moment of crisis, of extreme cataclysmic change, of confusion, and using it to loot the public sphere. I want to give a few examples of the application of this shock doctrine, this crisis theory, because it gives an alternative view of how these ideas triumphed. We're at a moment right now where we are seeing this same ideology imposed with ever-escalating levels of violence. The reconstruction of Lebanon after the Israeli attack is used as an opportunity by the World Bank and the IMF to demand that they privatize water and electricity. The reconstruction of Iraq is used as a cover to push through an oil law that will continue to loot Iraq for the next 30 years. The world owes Iraq reparations. That's probably not going to happen. But on top of denying Iraqis reparations, the only chance of that country rebuilding itself is if it maintains control over its oil revenue. And that is what is being taken advantage of in the current crisis in Iraq, this so-called civil war. think we don't have the analysis to understand the level of violence that is being used to impose neoliberalism, whether it's taking advantage of a crisis like Katrina or Iraq, Afghanistan, Lebanon. We don't have the language to talk about it because we have accepted this fairy tale version of history. We have allowed the right to cleanse the violence from their own triumphs. So now we're surprised, we're taken off guard by the level of violence that we see today. So I want to give four examples of the shocks that get left out of the stories. The non-fairy tale version of this story. The first is Chile under Pinochet, which is a story that all of you know, I'm sure. The second is the way in which Margaret Thatcher used the Falklands War to push through her radical privatization program. The third is the way Deng Xiaoping used the Tiananmen Square massacre to push through radical neoliberalism in China. And the fourth is how Yeltsin used a violent attack on the Russian parliament and the suspension of democracy in that country in order to impose economic shock therapy. Now, these are four examples. There are many, many more. But I think that if we look at this history, our present makes sense. This talk is about becoming shock resistant. And I believe that knowing this history is what makes us shock resistant. If we look at places that are becoming shock resistant, like Latin America, it's because they understand where the current attacks fit into a 500-year history of taking advantage of crisis, of violent imposition of capitalism. And that is what makes social movements strong, having our eyes wide open, not false optimism.